This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast. I'm your host, Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchen. And Adam, for the very first time, we have some real football to talk about. And it seems like we're starting to get things going here a little bit, even though we're in the middle of May and we're kind of moving on from building the team to now seeing what the team is actually going to be like this season. So that's always fun, and a lot going on in May for the Patriots. A lot of signings, a lot of retirements. I think one of the busier Mays that I can remember in recent memory, at least.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's one of those deals where the Edelman thing coming down the pipe was huge. You know, because everybody wants to see, you know, how N'Keal Harry looks, and from what everybody said, he looks the part.
Yeah.
But just think of where this team would be without Julian Edelman.
I know.
I mean, that's your rudder there. You know, that's the center of that offense right now. In terms of, you know, Brady's stuff. So I mean, I think that's really where it starts. You know, and working out from there. But you know, there's a lot of stuff going on, but I think especially for the type of deal that Edelman got, it was very team friendly to me. And you know, I think for all the stuff that's happening around the Patriots right now, that's the big story that sticks out.
Yeah. I mean, Edelman extension, Jamie Collins signing, Jared Veldier retiring. They signed also a couple of other guys there in May as well. Dontrell Inman. We're going to get to all of that. We're going to have some OTA observations, but yeah, that was a good starting point there with Edelman. I think the one thing that just going to practice on Thursday that stood out was without Brady and Gronk there, it was Edelman's team. Like, it was Edelman's show. Like, he's the guy now. And even though the contract isn't, you know, in top of the market wide receiver deal or anything like that, you, even with guys like Stephon Gilmore and Devin McCourty in attendance and some of the other veterans, you could tell, like, when Edelman came onto the field today, it was like, okay, he's here. Like, you know, like the guy, the alpha dog is here. And it really isn't going to change until we get to mandatory minicamp in June when Brady gets there. And even still, it'll just be, you know, Brady, obviously, the, you know, who he is. But then we have Edelman, like, you know, the slight understudy. But even still, without Gronk, it's like this is Edelman's offense outside of Brady now.
Right.
So that's pretty crazy, I think.
Yeah, and he's a tone setter type guy in the way he works. You know, like, you know, I don't, you know, some, yeah, he can be a vocal guy too, but like, when you have all these new receivers coming in, rookies, like, and then, you know, signings like Inman and stuff like that, they're watching how Edelman works.
Yeah.
And the guy busts his ass every second of every day. So, you know, to have a guy like that on the field this early and everything like that, it's huge, especially when Brady's not there, because he's the guy in the offense when, you know, when he's there. So when Edelman's out on that field and he's setting that leadership tone, it's just huge. Just having his presence out there is big.
Yeah. I mean, today he was fielding punts, running routes, you know, all these things that he did to get a role in New England and get a job back in 2009, quite frankly. And he's still doing all the little things, you know. Today he dropped a punt in practice, and he went back in the back of the line and made Jake Bailey punt him another one. And practice was over, and he was like, "Now let's do it again, because I'm not going to end on a drop." And those little things, I mean, you got N'Keal Harry is like watching him, you know, like he's standing right next to him, and he sees that the Super Bowl MVP is pissed off that he dropped a punt in a May OTA practice. You know, that's the type of stuff that they used to say about Brady, you know, and not to make this about Brady not being there, but those are the types of things that they used to say about Brady, was that even in May and OTAs, he was competing like it was the Super Bowl. And I think Edelman is similar in that regard. Now, just in terms of the contract itself, I mean, I think we can all tell that it's an absolute steal, just, you know, without even really blinking an eye here. But I think what makes it really, you know, amazing to me is when you look at some of the wide receiver contracts that were handed out over the offseason, it's amazing how cheap they got Julian Edelman. It really is
incredible.
When you look at a guy, and I know that they're a little bit younger, certainly Adam Humphries is a little bit younger, but Golden Tate just got 4 years, $37.5 million from the Giants. he got a $10 million signing bonus, $22.9 million guaranteed in that deal. Julian Edelman is not even touching that. And he just won the Super Bowl MVP and is probably a better player than Golden Tate. So all those things, I mean, it's just incredible time and time again how they're able to get this guy on a discount. You know, for really, I don't really understand why. I mean, other than the fact that maybe this offense is where he's, you know, going to reach his absolute ceiling.
Well, and I also think there really is something to the fact with – you play, and a guy as competitive as Edelman and all these NFL players are, if you can be on a team that's in the mix every year for a Super Bowl, you'll be a little bit more friendly to a team-friendly deal, you know. And I think that kind of stuff really matters to Edelman. You know, I don't. You know, he's made a fair amount of money over his career, and you know, at this stage in his career, if he can, you know, be on a team that's, you know, in the AFC Championship or Super Bowl almost every year, like that really does matter to these guys. So, you know, I think that's really what it comes down to for him.
Yeah, it's crazy. He's made $26.5 million in his career, according to SpotTrack. And if he makes all the money that he can possibly make in this next contract, that puts him over $40 million for his entire career. So certainly not suffering. Right, you know, in the grand scheme of things. But at the same time, 2 years, $15.5 million contract extension with $12 million in guaranteed. After that, I just read the Golden Tate contract. I mean, this is just an absolute bargain. And I think that it kind of had to be in some ways, because if you remember, you know, the Patriots have moved on from the slot receivers pretty quickly if they don't take a team-friendly deal to stay there. You know, guys like Wes Welker, Deion Branch, they all got, you know, cut or traded in Branch's case, or signed elsewhere in Welker's case, because they wouldn't take this deal, you know, that Edelman just took. So I really think that it boils down. Edelman said he loved it. He loves being in Boston, you know, first and foremost. And obviously he loves the Patriots system, just makes him the best possible player that he can possibly be. So I think it all makes sense for all sides. But I think it's pretty remarkable going from where he was his rookie year in 2009 to where he is now, where he is now the alpha dog on this team other than Brady. Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty incredible journey. And you know, it's great to have him still in the mix. And sticking with the wide receivers to some of these other OTA observations, obviously, N'Keal Harry was the other kind of big storyline there today. I think the biggest thing is, and you've seen kind of rookies and first round picks, is all the same thing. Like, they either look like they belong or they don't, you know, right. Like they either look like they were worthy of a first round pick or they don't. And today, N'Keal Harry certainly looked worthy. Although when he wears number 50, like he does, it's kind of deceiving, right? Like, I don't think it, because he's kind of got a linebacker number on, it doesn't really do how big he is for a receiver justice, but you still understand that how dominant of a physical presence he can be. I mean, he's just a big, strong, well-built, smooth athlete. You know, when he's running, it's all smooth, and none of it is kind of, you know, forced movement or anything like that. And he's got strong, strong hands, too. And there was a point in 11-on-11s today where he put on an absolute show for, like, four or five straight plays where they couldn't cover him for a couple plays. Now, at the same time, there's no contact in any of these practices.
Yeah.
So that's a big thing that you got to take away. It's a big advantage for the offense. Obviously, he's not running through much resistance, although the corners can get a little bit grabby, you know, like they would in a game.
Yeah.
But there's no tackling. There's no safety coming over the middle that he's got to worry about, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. That's I'm really glad you said that, because context for some of these – you know how, like, when people put out those stats for, like, 7-on-7s.
Oh, I know. It drives me crazy.
Yeah, it's not football. Like, you know, but here's the thing is, I think that Harry is somebody that's going to be even better when there's more contact, because he's so strong, because of the way he's built. To me, all it comes down to with him, how productive he's going to be his rookie season, is how well Brady trusts him. If there's certain things that he picks up quicker than others that become sort of a bread and butter part of the offense. Like, you know, is it going to be like the back shoulder throw? Is it going to be sort of the fade in goal line situations? Is it going to be like, you know, wide receiver screens? You know, how quickly does he develop his sort of full arsenal? and how quickly does he develop that chemistry with Brady? Obviously, you can't tell that now, but if he's putting on a show with those quarterbacks, then that's a positive sign, man. You really can't tell too much at this point, but I guess first impressions are good.
Yeah, I mean, he caught a back shoulder, fade ball in the end zone over two guys today. He also caught a slant against Juwan Williams. They isolated him against Juwan Williams a few times, which was fun to watch. Rookie versus rookie, the two top guys. And I would say Juwan, certainly held his own. It wasn't like it was a complete blowout, but Harry beat him, if we're kind of like scoring it. And he beat him on a slant where he, just really quick stutter step out of his release and shoulder fake and got that inside leverage and just went right by Juwan. And the differencing of those plays, one being kind of like a nuanced slant route and one just being pure athleticism, jumping over two guys and catching a fade ball, is kind of like what made him a first round pick. Those were kind of things. And I think afterwards, he was saying all the right things. He said that him and Brian Hoyer have actually developed a relationship and have become pretty close, as Hoyer has kind of sat him down in the film room and started teaching him the Patriots playbook. I asked Nikhil, awesome. I was like, it's a complex playbook. Like, is it as complex as you thought? And how is that whole thing going? And he was like, yeah, it's pretty complex. It's definitely confusing at times. So Hoyer's taken him under his wing. Troy Brown has also taken him under his wing. Troy Brown was there today, and he's been working with the receivers, practicing with Nikhil specifically on his route running and his technique and all those things that Troy was really good at. So that's all positive news. And I almost feel like in a lot of ways, not having Brady there, I guess you can say it's bad for chemistry, but this is giving Nikhil a time to kind of get going, and kind of like get ready for the real test when Brady gets there in a few weeks, and he's got to know the playbook and know where to be and know the route combinations and that kind of stuff. So this is right now, all very basic type stuff. And I think that's the biggest thing that I take away from OT is like, there's no contact. So the, kind of evaluating the line of scrimmage plays out, right? Like, you're not going to really learn anything about the offensive or defensive lineman from this. And really what we're at is trial and error. What are you bad at and what do you need to improve in your game? And we're going to, go that way and kind of improve the little things and not worry about dropping a ball because you're working on a certain thing. Or, if you run the wrong route, you're not going to get cut. You just go back and you kind of redo it and that kind of thing. The other, quick thing here about OTAs, Jake Bailey can really punt the football.
Yeah, I was seeing your tweets on that. Like, everybody was.
It is wild how high this guy punts the ball. And it's not just high, it's the long, it's where he wants it to go. They were doing some of those drills that I see Slater do all the time where they're practicing downing punts inside the five, and Slater will play in his gunner spot and just run down there and try to catch it on the other end. And Bailey hit like two or three times in a row right at the 1 yard line.
And here's the thing, Ryan Allen's a tremendous punter too. You got depth all over the place.
Bill Belichick pull off the first punter trade in like a decade.
I know, we got a huge position battle there because Allen had an incredible Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And he's just a solid punter all around. And if this guy can beat him out, my goodness.
Yeah, it was really I think that out of all the things that you can take away from this, obviously there was no rush against him. He's not in a game situation, so we'll see how he handles all that type of stuff. But because it's a non-contact practice, like, you can still watch a guy punt, and you can still get a feel for how good of a leg a guy has in a practice session like that. And he kind of put on a show, honestly. Like, he
that's kind of crazy.
Yeah, he was every single type of punt, like high punts, line drive punts, downing punts inside the five, booming punts, 60 yards in the air. That all, he was everything. He was doing it all. And he did some kickoffs too that were pretty good also. Wow. So, this guy is the real deal, and it's going to be fun because in training camp, that it's going to be a massive storyline. The punter versus punter as this whole thing works out. And there wasn't, there were some guys missing, some key guys missing there today, some starters, but the 90-man roster depth that this team has was just on full display.
Yeah.
Like, they might not have some of the top talent that some of these other teams have, but they have apps from 1 to 90. They basically have NFL players all up and down the roster. Yeah. So it's pretty incredible to watch. The next guy we're going to talk about here, Jamie Collins, who obviously just signed back with the Patriots, he was struggling to get with the starters because of how much depth they have on defense. And, you know, that kind of segues us into Collins. And I obviously wasn't, you know, as high on it as some other people were, but I know that you kind of like the move. So, I mean, you know, sway me. What do you
think? Well, here's why I like it is because you're in a power position now with the linebacker group where you weren't. Yeah. You don't really need him to be all things for all people. You know, this is a much stronger room now than it was when he was starting here. So that, you know, sort of makes it less of a risk. It allows you to be more, more of a, you know, situational with him if you want to be. And, you know, if he, you know, sort of lives up to his, you know, physical abilities and, you know, they find a role for him that works, then that's icing on the cake, because right now your linebacker room's good, man. It's like, you know,
it really is.
You know, like Van Noy's really come into his own. Hightower, obviously, even with the injuries, comes up huge in big games.
Yeah.
You know, Roberts is the good run stuffer, and Bentley showed great stuff in his rookie season before he got hurt. And if he gets, you know, back to that level, then you just really got a solid room. I mean, and if you can get, you know, maybe they have a plan for Collins we don't know about. You know, he's got his weaknesses on the field, obviously, but he's not, you know, you don't depend on him as much. So I feel like, you know, it's just like, all right, well, if we can get something out of him, good, but we're fine otherwise.
Yeah, I think that my biggest thing was, and I want to clarify, I'm not against the Patriots doing this. I just am not convinced that he's going to stick here again. You know, right. I think that's the difference. I'm not saying that it was a bad – the Patriots are paying him nothing. Like you said, they hold all the cards in this situation. There's no real risk monetarily for them. And at this point, Collins, in order to kind of extend his NFL career in the whole league in general, needs to kind of get along or go along at this point. You know, and that's all great for the Patriots in terms of holding the cards. I think the biggest thing is, and he talked about it today, that someone asked him, what did he learn in Cleveland? And he said that he learned that you just need to do your job, right? You know, you just need to do the one thing that the coaches are asking you to do on any given play and kind of just know your role and play that role. And he said that, and I was like, well, that's all well, like, that's exactly what everybody's been saying to you for, you know, four or 5 years. Like, that's exactly why you didn't get paid by the Patriots and you got traded to Cleveland. It's because he wouldn't do that exact thing. So that's great that maybe he's recognizing it, but it's one thing to reckon. We all know this in life. It's one thing to recognize it. It's another thing to go out and do it. And I love the idea of him being in a specialized role. I think that he obviously still has skill as a pass rusher, and he's still got range. You know, he's still an athletic guy that for a linebacker can really drop in coverage and have a rangy coverage drops, especially in zone. Although he did get lost a little bit in Cleveland in his zone drops, just staring too much into the QB and trying to, you know, bait him into picks and stuff like that by just staring at the QB's eyes the whole time. But if he can kind of, you know, refine some of his skills and coverage in that regard, he was a good coverage player the first time around. I love the idea of him in a specialized role, and I think that it fits the puzzle of what they need at linebacker really, really well. But Jamie Collins is going to have to be willing to make the sacrifices that he's claiming that he learned about in Cleveland. Like, he's going to have to be able to say to himself, all right, you know, my assignment on this play is this, and if this happens, then I need to do that. That was the thing that didn't happen. And I talked to Landon Roberts last year. You know, obviously Landon struggled mightily in coverage his first couple of years in the league. And last year he really played a lot better against the pass. And the thing that he said was that it's not only understanding what my call is and what my assignment is within our defense, it's also understanding the offense's call and the route combinations and what the offense is trying to do to you to kind of, you know, attack the weaknesses of the defense and the call. Those are some of the things I see with Collins as well, is that he knows that he's supposed to cover the hook or the flat, or he's supposed to drop into the hole and cover two, but then they run this route combination that confuses him and he gets lost. you know, and that's the kind of the things that, you know, he needs to fix. But in terms of the risk for the Patriots and them kind of taking a chance on his upside, I don't mind it at all. I just am kind of skeptical whether or not it's actually going to work out.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And again, he said all the right things today. I hope it works out for them. And I think, you know, the other thing I said to you before we started was just when you go back down their linebacker depth chart, like you just said, they have such specialized roles now that you can even as a fan looking into it, or as one of us looking into it, that you don't need to be Bill Belichick to understand what they're going for at linebacker. You know, they have Van Noy and Dante Hightower as kind of their on-ball rushing linebackers that are going to play near the line of scrimmage. They have Bentley and they have Roberts to play the run, and they have Jamie Collins to come in on passing downs if they want to keep a linebacker on the field. I mean, that's great. That's you know, it all kind of, the puzzle fits together. Everybody's going to know what their role is and know where they're going to excel. It's just, is Jamie Collins going to shine in that role, or is he going to try to do his kind of his own thing like he did the first time around?
Yeah, I'd love to see them. I mean, if he makes the team, whatever. As a third down pass rushing guy off the edge, I'd love to see that, because he, like, you know, that would be a great, like, they'll just take advantage of his physical skills. Like, he'd be a hard guy to block for your average NFL tackle.
Yeah.
I think that would be a nice role for him if they have that in mind. Who knows?
Yeah. And they've been playing a lot more of those three D lineman fronts on passing downs, and they put the linebackers on the edge, and I call it like a diamond front that they use. And then they run like four or five man pressure schemes off of that by incorporating their linebackers into the pass rush. And that, when they started doing that last year, it worked like amazingly. Like, that's like how they found a pass rush last year, was doing all of those different games, the twists and the stunts and the picks and all that kind of stuff. And it really worked very, very well all season long last year, really from like the second half of the season on and all the way into the Super Bowl. That's how they got all that pressure on Jared Goff in the Super Bowl. It wasn't like just four down linemen rushing the passer one-on-one with everybody across the line. It was really a team-oriented approach to rushing the passer and stopping the pass. Mm-hmm. And I think that Jamie Collins, if he can buy into his role, sometimes he's not going to be the rap player. He's going to be the guy setting the pick, you know, he's going to have to be able to do those little things. All right, moving on to the left tackle position right now, which, today at practice we saw Joe Tooney playing left tackle, which I don't like at all, to be honest with you. I think that that's a situation they would like to avoid. But at the end of the day, Isaiah Wynn and Yadni Kajusa, third-round pick out of West Virginia, who we both like, are on the mend. They are injured, and they are not out at practice yet. Dante Scarnecchia said a few weeks ago that Wynn is penciled in as the left tackle for the year. It's his job to lose. As long as he comes back healthy and he returns to form to what he was at Georgia, he's got nothing to worry about. But Tooney at left tackle, Valdir retires. Their left tackle and tackle depth in general is pretty thin right now.
Yeah, this is kind of a scary thing. You know, you don't want to have Tom Brady's age with the left tackle problems. You don't want that, obviously. Yeah. So, I don't think if Tooney is ever on the field at left tackle in a regular season game, then you have a right to panic. But I think at this point, if they feel like Wynn is going to be back and ready, then, you just sort of cross your fingers and hope that, you know, everything's going to be okay, but you don't want to be in this position anyway. So, like you were saying before, like, I think, you know, bringing in another body, you know, maybe, you know, Cole Crosston or somebody is somebody that they look at developing a little bit more. I mean, it's just not a good situation. You have to really get creative. And so putting a guy at like Tooney there is just that. But, I don't think we've seen the end of the moves there, but I think, you know, it's not what you want. But, like, again, it's May, you know, who knows, you know, what the health of these guys are going to be like, you know, a few months from now. But, that's sort of the most concerning thing coming out of, you know, what today had.
Yeah, I think that that's definitely a good point about it being May. They're not throwing any real blocks for a couple of months.
Right.
So, you know, we don't need to hit the panic button quite yet. It's not like this is early August and Isaiah Wynn's still hurt and Joe Tooney's playing left tackle. At the same time, Joe Tooney is one of the better pass protecting guards in the league and is actually bigger than Isaiah Wynn technically. So, you know, I'm not saying I like it, but as an emergency, he played left tackle in college. It's not the end of the world. But I think that the biggest thing is that, you know, I think they need that veteran backup that Veldier was supposed to be. They need to go find that guy. Now, Donald Penn is still out there as like a name in free agency that maybe they could go after. I'm sure they have a few names that are kind of like Veldier that are kind of off the radar that they like as kind of sleeper type guys. Cole Crossan did take a few reps at left tackle during walkthroughs today, but as soon as we got to 11 on 11s, it was Tooney the whole time for the most part. I think that really what the Tooney thing is, though, is they're just playing him there just to give him the reps just in case.
Yeah.
You know, just in case he really needs to do it, then, you know, at least he's got a couple of different, you know, practices or maybe a preseason game of a couple of reps there under his belt to kind of get him reacclimated to that position, because he did play left tackle primarily in college. So there is, you know, that I think is really the main thing. But a veteran has to come, I think, at that spot, whether it's in a trade or another free agent signing. You know, I'm doing a 53-man roster projection for tomorrow, and I only have three tackles that I can, like, honestly put on the roster right now. And that's assuming that both Wynn and Yodney Kajust are healthy and ready to go for the season. And obviously Marcus Cannon's the third guy.
Yeah.
And it just screams like we're adding another guy. Unless, like you said, Cole Crossan. They also have Cedric Lang, who's an absolute monster. Dan Skipper is also a big guy. But those guys are, like, practice squad.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Yeah. And certainly not guys that you necessarily want to protect Tom Brady's blind side in a playoff game or something like that. So we'll see what happens. It's early. It's not time to panic just yet, but I think
it's a concern. It's a concern. Yeah. You just want to, know what, you know, how quickly Wynn can get on the field and how healthy.
Yeah. Well, Kajust apparently had surgery at the end of March, and the doctor said it was about a 3-month timetable for him to return. So he should be back soon. Like maybe even in mini camp in a couple of weeks. So that's good news, but he's also a third round pick, you know, a rookie third round pick. So I don't know how much eggs you want to really put in that basket, but we both really like him. And as long as he can stay healthy, I think he's got a chance to at least play a little bit at left tackle in the league. And then obviously we love Isaiah Wynn. He's just got to get back on the field. Right. So then they love Isaiah Wynn too. So I think that they're really confident that he's going to be the guy. And at least last year, he obviously wasn't on the field, but he had the mental reps of being around the team when he was on IR and he was in the film rooms and listening to Skarneka yell at people and all that good stuff. So I think that there's some opportunity there. Finally, we wanted to talk about Gerald McCoy, who I believe it was Mike Garofalo is reporting is meeting with Cleveland first. That's his first stop in his kind of free agency tour here once he was released by the Bucks. I don't know if it's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen. It seems like a lofty, given the Patriots salary cap situation right now. But just from a pure fit standpoint, both him as a player on the field and also his kind of his character and his makeup, he would be a great fit here in New England.
I think you hit on it in terms of the cap situation. In terms of, I think in that respect, I don't see it happening. But I mean, he's just a good player. The guy can really play.
Yeah.
And if you could have a guy like that on your team, of course you'd take him. But you know, I think, you know, contextualizing it with the salary cap and, you know, how much you'd have to pay him and stuff like that, I don't think. And plus, I think they're in a good spot on the defensive line as it is.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really excited to see what Pennell does this year. And Adam Butler seems like he's, you know, really progressing and stuff like that. And, I feel like their interior and edge presence all over the defensive line is in a pretty good spot. So like any extra guy there, I don't think it's necessarily a need, but like if there's a guy as good as McCoy that they could bring on, of course it would be a positive. But are they going to shell out the kind of money to get him? I don't think so.
Just reading about him down at Tampa, even though they never made the playoffs down there, they never really put the rest of the team around him, he was apparently like a consummate pro and an all-time leader down there for them, a guy that everybody kind of looked to and had great leadership. They had Hard Knocks. It was the last year, a couple of years ago, and he was, you could tell, you know, that he was kind of, not only was he loose and a great personality on the show, but he was also a guy that I think everybody down there was looking to. I think the biggest thing is what I just hit on is he's never played in a playoff game. You know, he's 9 years in the league, six Pro Bowls, an All-Pro team. He's done everything else that he could possibly do football-wise, but he's never played in the playoffs. And maybe he thinks that Cleveland's going to make the playoffs. Maybe, you know, Indianapolis might go after him, I've heard. Maybe those two teams, I think, have a good chance of making the postseason. But there's no better way to chase a ring than come to the Patriots. You know, that's the ultimate. And Ndamukong Suh just is actually replacing McCoy in Tampa, got a one-year, $9 million deal from the Bucks. I think that's about where you're going to talk about McCoy too, $8, $9 million a year, which is similar to like what they gave Michael or what they're giving Michael Bennett. But I think the issue is that there's too many kind of ducks in a row that need to fall, dominoes that need to fall at the same time for them to free up that cap space, get McCoy to sign here, all that kind of stuff. One of them, I think the easiest way to do it is extend Tom Brady, but it doesn't sound like that's happening, you know, tomorrow. And in order to kind of make it all happen in sequential order, they need to extend Tom Brady in the next week, then get McCoy here, get McCoy signed. You know, it's a lot going on, a lot of moving parts to make that all happen that seem unrealistic. But, yeah, like I said, I mean, he sounds like a guy that would be a really good fit, really good player, can play him all around the defensive line, great pass rusher. But like you said, in the interior of the defensive line, when you kind of factor in that Michael Bennett's a guy that can kind of move in and move in and out like Trey Flowers did a little bit. They got Pennell. They got Lawrence Guy. They just brought back Danny Shelton. They obviously have Adam Butler. That defensive line's going to eat. Like, I really think that's a good group regardless. To go from, you know, losing Trey Flowers, start a free agency, to where they are now with that group. I mean, obviously drafting Chase Vinovich helps. Trading for Michael Bennett helps. Signing Mike Pennell helps. All those guys, I think, are going to add up to replacing Trey Flowers pretty nicely.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Like, I think it's worth pursuing.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think it's worth the Patriots trying to figure out a way to make it work with McCoy. Because he is better than those other guys.
Yeah.
Like, so if you can improve your team, improve your team. But, you know, there's a lot of factors to take in, like the money side of it. That's always like one of the more difficult parts for me to sort of figure out.
The Brady extension, everybody's like under the impression that he's going to give the Patriots this, you know, ridiculous market, below market deal that's going to free up all this cap space for them to do whatever they want. And I'm not saying that Brady's not going to take a little bit of discount, but it's far more likely that his deal will free up like $4 or $5 million, not 10.
Exactly.
That still puts you at about, I think Miguel has his cap number at around $5 million right now. So it still puts you at like $9 million of cap space. But even that might not be enough to sign Gerald McCoy if he's asking for $9 million.
Yeah.
So then you have to extend Brady. Then you probably got to extend like a Kyle Van Noy to kind of lower his cap number. I mean, there's just a lot of different things that you would have to do just to fit one player under the cap.
Yeah, and, you know, when it comes to Brady's extension or whatever, the dude deserves to get paid.
Yeah.
You know, like, I know he's not hurting for cash or anything like that, but like, I mean, come on, compared to some of the other quarterbacks in this league's salary, it's ridiculous. So yeah. I mean, it would be nice to see him, you know get compensated the way, you know, he fits in the league. You know, I mean, you know, it obviously it's great for the Patriots that but I mean, look, I mean, it'd be great to see the guy get, you know, compensated for what he's worth. Obviously, that wouldn't be, you know, even a realistic number given how good the guy is, but and how important he is to not just the Patriots now, but all time.
Right.
So, you know, it would be kind of cool, sort of as like an observer of the team, to just see Tom Brady get like a huge deal.
Yeah. The other thing is too, is that this is kind of the perfect time to do it because they're not signing him to like a 5 or 6 year deal. You know, it's going to be like a 2 year or 3 year term. So if you have to pay him, you know, $28 million, $30 million, which is probably about what he's worth. I mean, he's worth more than that, but just to be be reasonable about it and not give him 35 or 36 like he's probably worth. You could do it over a 2 or 3 year extension, and it's not going to kill your cap because it's not like, you know, a long-term deal that you're married to forever. So there's certainly ways to do it. But we talked about Julian Edelman at the beginning of the show being a bargain. Stephon Gilmore at this point is an absolute bargain. Like, yep. They signed that deal a few years ago. Everybody was like, what the hell are they doing? He's turned into an all-pro corner, one of the 5 best corners in the league, and he's making pennies compared to what he could if he was a free agent again. So he's making a lot, you know, a very little amount for how good he is. You know, there's a lot of that going around in New England, obviously. So that's all good news. Do we want to do a Game of Thrones minute before we sign off?
Yeah, it's really aimed more at the fans, and you know,
we're gonna lose a lot of people.
Like, here's the thing, man. Like, I understand. Like, I see all the people's criticisms, and like, I've had criticisms of the show too, but it goes way overboard. Like, just enjoy it. You know, like, it was a great, most popular TV show ever. Like, it's why we can't have nice things sometimes. Like, all right, if you don't like it, you do your fan fiction, and like, maybe like, you'll be satisfied. But like, I guarantee you, all these people who are like writing these stupid petitions and like, you know, throwing their hands up and like complaining like ultra nerds about the show, like, could not come close to doing it as well as they did given the constraints of the season. So like, I'm just like, I love the show. You know, the finale was just fine for me. Like, maybe I'm just too, you know, not as much of a fan as some other people, but I was fine with it.
No, that's not it. I think the thing is, for me, is that I think that the show took a lot, it cut a lot of corners at the end, you know, to kind of jam it all into 6 episodes. I really didn't have much of an issue with Danny's turn, heel turn, or the finale. I had a big issue with the Battle of Winterfell against the Night King. Like, they hyped up the Night King to be this like absolute, you know, monster. Like, he's like the Tom Brady of Game of Thrones. Like, he can't be beaten. And then like, he's just in one episode, he's just gone. You know, and he's like on the 1 yard line, and he throws the ball to Malcolm Butler, and it's over. Like, it's like you know, where is
it? But it was cool that Arya killed him, though.
It was cool. You know, I had no problem with that. The other thing that I think that people don't understand that are complaining about it to me is all of the kind of breadcrumbs that the showrunners did lay for Danny to go mad. Like, there was tons of evidence that was going to happen. They were even talking about it, like, the episode before, and then the beginning of the episode where she torches King Landing. They were already talking about the fact that, like, they were like, shit, like, she's going crazy. Like, what are we going to do?
Yeah, exactly.
And everyone was like, where did that come from?
It
was like,
Like,
Varys literally was just talking about at the beginning of the show that he thinks that she's going to go mad. Like,
you can't please people, man. That's the problem.
Yeah, that part of it I just don't understand either. And like, everyone's like, well, why? Like, and like, Jon Snow was like an inconsequential character. That's not true at all. Jon Snow finding out that he was a Targaryen was massive for the plot line. Like, that's like what the divide that drove him into killing Dany and Dany killing all those people in King's Landing. Like, that's like what was kind of like the final nail in the coffin, along with that Melisandre's head flying across the the wall there. But like, at the same time, like, that was like, they were gonna get married and be king and queen together. They can't do that because John's not into his aunt anymore. And then they were gonna, like, you know, rule the world together, and it turns out that they ended up like both wanting the same thing, kind of. So like, you know, that's like the divide that happened. And Danny says, like, it's either like we rule together or it's fear. And she, Jon Snow, said, well, it's going to have to be fear because we're not going to rule together. So she chose fear. Like, that's all the things that happen. Now, Bran ending up on the throne is obviously questionable.
Yeah. But I was fine with it. It's fine. You know, like
saying that he had the best story on the show is definitely not true.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, he had like the least compelling story on the show.
But it made sense with all him popping up, like, in different points of the shot, just him sort of staring at people all creepy, you know, like,
creepy.
So then looking back on it, you're like, oh, okay, all right. Well, that's what he's doing. Like,
yeah.
It made sense, you know, like, I like, was it the perfect, you know, ending, but probably not, but like, I can see it, you know, it kind of, yeah. I thought it was kind of cool.
I think the biggest problem was that for me was that in this history of the show, the king has usually killed the king before him to become king. And then Jon Snow kills Dany and they're like, oh no, now he can't be king. And it's like, yeah. Like Robert Baratheon literally killed, like that's how he got into power, was by overthrowing the king, like the old bad king. And now you're saying because he killed, you know, that part of it, I think, you know, Jon Snow got kind of shafted, in my opinion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
A lot of kings throughout the history of even the real world have killed people to get into power. And they they're like, no, we're going to the Night's Watch. Like, I don't know. He got shafted, but that's our Game of Thrones 5 minutes, it turned out. But I think a lot of people are, you know, the show had such a high expectation going into the last season because of how it built itself up to being one of the best shows of all time, that anything that was below perfection was going to be seen as a failure.
Exactly. So, and that's why people can't get pleased and, you know, shut up. I'm over
the 18-1 Patriots now. Like,
oh, I won't hear it. I liked the show. I'm sorry. You can't get perfect endings. It's George R. R. Martin's fault for not finishing it. They did the best they could.
It really is. He like gave them apparently like an outline of like what the ending was supposed to be, like that his ending is relatively similar. It probably isn't gonna get to that point the same way. But the fact Bran sitting on the throne, Dany dying, all that kind of stuff was how he was gonna end it too. But they didn't give him anything else. So everything else was just left up to the HBO guys to figure it out on their own.
Yeah.
So that it's a tough show to end. Is there anything you want to tease after we just went all nerd on Game of Thrones?
Yeah. Right now, like with Mass Stars, there's a ton of like recruiting stuff going on because it's the evaluation periods and stuff like that. And we're going to get into the summer. There's a lot of interesting commitments. There's a kid from BBNN who committed to Michigan. We reported about that last week. And there's, you know, it's really kind of a great couple of classes coming up from Massachusetts high school prospects. It's really like,
yeah, every time you come on, you're like, this guy's committed to Michigan. This guy's going.
Yeah. And we're talking like, even next year, like the kids who are going to be juniors this coming season, the class of 2021 already has, I think, 12 or 13 Division I offered kids, like FBS.
Yeah,
like, it's crazy. Like you just don't see this. And like when I talk to the college coaches about this, you know, I'll talk to guys from BC or UMass or whatever. They're just like, I don't know. It's a cycle.
Who knows?
But like I think another thing that you have to realize right now is there are so many people working in the background at these different, you know, skill training academies and stuff like that put so much effort into getting guys working on their technique in the off season, which is something it you see it in some places and it's not always there, but it's really done a great job. The strength and conditioning in a lot of places is improved. So it's really exciting.
Yeah, that's a great point. Even at the NFL level, the guys at the combine, everybody's with some trainer in the lead up to the combine. Not only just training for like the 40 and stuff like that, but also training to be better NFL players. You know, these like Yo Murphy, for example, down in Tampa, who I know worked with a lot of wide receivers like Andy Isabella and a couple of other guys. He's a great trainer, and he hires Randy Moss to come in and help work out with the receivers too. And it's like all these guys are somewhere, you know, doing that kind of thing at the combine. Everybody's like, where are you training? And everyone has an answer. Yeah. And I don't think that existed, you know, some years ago. And all these guys that are training them too are either former position coaches or played the position that they're you know, teaching, that kind of stuff. So it's pretty incredible, and it's cool to see the Massachusetts guys though. I mean, that's really cool to see. I know when I was in high school and you know, before that, there was not this many there's not a ton of Massachusetts kids going to Michigan. That's for sure.
Yeah, and performing well when they get there. Like,
yeah,
like Mike Sanders, still this kid from Everett, who's at Michigan now as an early enrollee, like Harbaugh's crazy about him. Like,
yeah,
he's talking about him possibly cracking the starting lineup. The defensive coaches are kind of upset that he's not on that side of the ball.
Yeah.
Lewis Seen from that same team back in 2017, before he transferred down to Texas, had the most tackles in the spring game as a true freshman at Georgia. I mean, you're seeing guys making an impact at these big schools that rather than just going there and sort of riding the bench once a better player gets there. Like, it really is, part of it is these guys who come back to their hometown and like really just put in the effort, like, and they don't get a lot of recognition for it, but they really deserve it. And the kids are really working hard. They're really, you know, just working on every little fundamental, and it's really cool to see.
Yeah, very cool. On clnsmedia.com, I have my observations from OTAs today that you can check out, or Thursday. We're recording this on Thursday night. I also have a 53-man roster projection, my first one coming out tomorrow. Took at least a little glimpse at practice today to kind of, you know, solidify some of the depth chart. There's really hard to do, honestly. I wrote it in the column. I do not envy Bill Belichick at all this go around, because there's going to be some really difficult cuts, and I think some guys are going to get picked up by other teams that get cut by the Patriots that are going to be good pros and are, you know, veteran free agent guys that are going to go elsewhere. Like, they cut Dontrell Inman, like, he's going to play in the league somewhere this year. If they cut Ryan Allen, he's going to play in the league somewhere this year. So a lot of really difficult decisions. You can also check out all of our videos on our YouTube channel, CLNS Media YouTube channel. We did a bunch of them, me, Alex Barr, Sierra Goodwill from OTAs today. Next week, well, actually, June 4th through the 6th is mandatory minicamp. So just from a Patriots lens, that's when Tom Brady will be there. That's when the whole squad, all 90 guys, will be there. Adam and I will obviously be, you know, checking in along the way. We'll have plenty more here on Pats 22 as well. But until next time, signing off for Adam Kirchin, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.